Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you finally have a free day out on the town. You're about to enjoy a nice lunch when you get the alert that a window's been broken at home and you're miles away. These are the wake-up calls that remind us, in 1 second, everything can change. ADT security systems are built for those moments. They help keep your home safer with 24/7 monitoring. No one wants to feel unsafe at home or vulnerable when you're away. And with ADT, you won't. Their systems are professionally installed by trained technicians, so you can trust them to watch out for your home from day one. ADT has the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry, and the ADT Plus app lets you keep tabs on your home from anywhere you have service. You'll get the alerts that matter about your home safety. Don't wait to prepare your home for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com. Or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. That's 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
My God, I look at what he does and where he's going to line up. This is a guy that, to me, has all the opportunity in the world to be the wide receiver 1.1.
Always connect on those deep passes like they did last year. I'm like a centrist. 3 catches, 40 yards, 0 touchdowns. Then he goes nuclear.
Yeah, just
10 targets, 201 yards, 4 touchdowns.
That's the greatest hit I've ever seen.
This is Reception Perception, the show. Now, James Coe and Matt Harmon.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Coe, Matt Harmon here with you. You're listening to Reception Perception, the show. Our draft day coverage and reaction continues. You got a bonus episode yesterday. Today, we are tackling the third round. I mean, an unbelievable amount of wide receivers went in this third round. 9 in total. 9 out of 36 picks, Matt, went wide receiver. It's interesting because it feels... I don't know, when I was watching, it felt right because a lot of these wide receivers were, I think, good players, but more like depth pieces, not true, you know, 1As. And some guys got on the third round because of injury concerns, who we'll talk about as well. But
yeah,
bottom line is, it felt right because, again, a lot of these guys are going to be contributors. I just don't think a lot of these third rounders are going to be frontline starters.
I think that's totally fair. And... you know, it was funny on the Yahoo Draft Show, it had been like a minute until like between you mentioned the second round kind of gap until the third round for one of these receivers to be taken. Yeah. So when the first one went off the board in the third round, I was pretty jacked. I was like, all right, let's go. It's been a minute. It's been a minute since I could pitch a fastball here. But yeah, for sure. I mean, we saw obviously the guys that went in the second round were Dizon Stribling, Denzel Boston, and then Jermy Bernard. Big gap then until we got to the first guy that we're going to talk about here today. But I will say this did kind of line up with my evaluation of the class because I had, and but not in terms of exactly all the players that went in these individual spots, but just where I imagined the depth of the class being was kind of in that, for me, tier 5 of wide receivers, which is a good day 2 option overall. So that can kind of lean you anywhere between the mid-second to third, like third round range, true third rounders. A lot of the guys ended up going in the third round. Again, not all guys that I would have projected. As a matter of fact, one of the guys that went in the third round range, the first player we're going to talk about here today, I had as a tier 4 option, which was a priority round 2 player. But in that tier 5 range, I had 10 guys, I think, 9 or 10 guys. And so that was kind of the meat of the class was this third round, early fourth. And a lot of the guys went there. And yeah, whether they become stars or not is ultimately, going to be determined based on how they fit in their NFL offenses, because some of these guys have the skill set to outkick their draft positioning, outkick my rankings of them. It's just going to matter if they can improve in some weaknesses and ultimately, again, like be deployed in the right ways with the right team. So a few of these are very interesting landing spots that we're going to talk about today.
Antonio Williams was the first wide receiver taken off the board in the third round, seventh pick in the third round. He is a Clemson four-year starter at Clemson, and he goes to Washington. And in Washington, there is Terry McLaurin and no one. Debo is gone. Deami Brown is there. Treylon Burks is, I don't even know if he's going to make the roster, Treylon Burks. Luke McCaffrey is there. I feel like people have been talking about Luke McCaffrey for years now, and nothing has happened. And they've got a wily old veteran in Van Jefferson, who I feel like is going to be like some kind of like assistant wide receivers coach or something. More coach than player, perhaps. Will Van Jefferson be? Obviously, there's rumors of Brandon Ayuk, but man, this guy has not played since the Reagan administration, so I'm not sure what we've got left.
Reagan administration
with Brandon Ayuk. But Antonio Williams joins Terry McLaurin. Look, I think he's a slot mostly player. We talked about Antonio Williams previously on a previous episode of the podcast. Please go check that out. But man, Dabo Swinney did use him in a lot of different ways, man. And I really liked that. I liked his versatility. They used him on trick plays. They used him on direct handoffs. Again, not a ton of downfield opportunities, but I thought when he had those downfield opportunities, I thought he made some plays down there too. So he's a good player, is Antonio Williams.
You were being funny there in terms of the Reagan administration with Brandon Ayuk. Not to get political here on the podcast. We're not going to get political on the podcast, but Brandon Ayuk actually hasn't played since the previous president was in office.
Okay.
He actually has not played a football game since since before the last presidential election, because he went down in October of 2024. So
amazing.
Brandon Ayuk actually has not played football in a minute. And yeah, I mean, the idea of Brandon Ayuk coming on this roster is very interesting. Obviously, nobody was higher on Brandon Ayuk than me at Brandon Ayuk's peak. But as we're talking about here, even the last time that we saw Brandon Ayuk was not Brandon Ayuk's peak, not even close to it. 2023 was that peak year. And, you know, there's mixed reports about what kind of shape he's in, mixed kind of reports about is he even in touch with teams that are trying to, like, I would view that as like, yeah, he's probably going to be a Commander at some point, but relying on Brandon Ayuk to be the starting outside receiver alongside Terry McLaurin would be an extremely, extremely risky bet. Like, just writing that in pen. Plus, like, when are the Niners going to even let him go? It's a very weird, it's a beyond a weird situation with Ayuk, the Niners, and or maybe not weird, but a unique situation, certainly what's going on there. So with that in mind, I love them getting the picture of reliability in this year's draft class, which is Antonio Williams. I thought this was a great pick. Antonio Williams, to me, in the third round, I had him ranked as a tier four receiver, which, as we were talking about, is a guy that I would have taken kind of early in the second round. So he goes a round later than I would have even ranked him. And obviously, we talked about this a lot pre-draft, where Antonio Williams is kind of in that archetype of wide receiver I've maybe overrated in years past. So I'm trying to sort of weigh that into some of my analysis with Williams, and maybe even overweighted at some point, because he is a 5'11", 187-pound receiver who, in the games I charted for him in 2025, was in the slot on just under 82% of his snaps, was off the ball on 86% of his sampled snaps. So that is obviously a hyper-specific role and an archetype of slot-based player that is a little bit going away. That being said, I think that Williams, and this is, again, I've said this about plenty of guys in the past that coaching staffs have disagreed with me, although it sounds like the Colts coaching staff might be coming around on Josh Downs as an outside receiver. So congratulations, folks. We're going to be a year early on the Josh Downs breakout.
Okay.
But anyways, Williams, I think, has the skill set of a player that can actually play Z in two receiver sets. So I think he will be a slot mostly player. I don't think he has to be a slot only player. 75th percentile success rate versus man coverage. And yeah, certainly we know what Terry McLaurin is going to do. I think his role could look a little bit different in this year's offense with David Blau, a unit that I've talked about a lot. I'm very high on the idea of what David Blau is going to do here with more of a Ben Johnson influence than what we've seen with Cliff Kingsbury the last couple of years. It's been very clear that that's what they're going to do. More under center, more play action, more kind of pro level stuff over the middle of the field. I think we'll see a lot of that mixed into Washington's offense, which is exciting. But, you know, this is a team that I love Williams kind of landing with this ecosystem in particular, because I think he can be deployed as a slot mostly, but also as a Z receiver when they get into 12 personnel. That being said, I don't even know how much 12 personnel they're going to run. You know, it's not like their tight end room is a little bit interesting when you look at that. Well, we can have that conversation as well. But yeah, I love Williams landing in this spot. They needed like a reliable guy. Williams is a super reliable player who beats man and zone coverage and has really good hands as well. So I'm hoping he's not just a slot only player. And I think that we know that Terry McLaurin, like I said, will probably be deployed in more interesting ways in this offense than he was in Cliff Kingsbury's offense, but he's still going to be a vertical outside X receiver. Right. And for that reason, right, they need someone of Williams' skill set.
Okay, can we talk about David Blau very quickly here? He is the new OC there in Washington. I am sure, I'm with you, I'm sure we're going to see more stuff, new stuff. I'm sure we're going to see more under center stuff. Okay, that being said, the quarterback is the quarterback, and generally the offense will tend to do what he likes to do, as we have talked about in many different instances here. But that being said, too, David Blau was the quarterback coach under Cliff Kingsbury last year. Now, Cliff was also
assistant quarterback coach, I think. Assistant, right. So this is a huge promotion, by the way, for Blau. Obviously, big projection.
For sure. And then Cliff was also Blau's head coach in Arizona as well. So I think if we're looking for breadcrumbs, there's a lot more breadcrumbs to a spread offense in Washington than there are anything else that we would like to project in regards to Ben Johnson. No.
I think it's going to be a blending of worlds. And when I say that they're going to get under center more, number one, Dan Quinn has said that he wants them to get under center more. And I think that David Blau, again, obviously started his career with the Detroit Lions, actually under the Matt Patricia era. People forget this. Like, people forget this. Ben Johnson was on that staff. Like, he was actually a holdover from Matt Patricia's staff. And then Dan Campbell kept him on there because they did have history together. So it's interesting there. But yeah, he's been with Ben Johnson for a minute as he has come up. As Ben Johnson came up the coaching ranks, David Blau was on that roster. He finished his career back on the Lions, I believe, practice squad in one of Ben Johnson's final seasons there. Yep. So yeah, again, like he's got a lot of ties to Ben Johnson. I think it will be a blending of those worlds. But when I say they're going to be under center more, I mean, they quite literally were 32nd in the NFL in under center rate last year. So, I mean, they're going to be under center more than they were previously.
Correct.
And I do think that Jaden Daniels can handle more of that, you know, than like a Kyler Murray type who was tied up with Cliff Kingsbury previously. Yeah. I don't think they're going to go completely, like, he's not going to, you know, Jaden Daniels is not going to become Jared Goff or something like that.
No.
And I think that Jaden Daniels is a better over the middle thrower than, you know, he was kind of credited coming into the NFL, but he does obviously still want to attack on vertical routes to the outside. And I think that we'll see, you know, Antonio Williams do a variety of different things, but no, I agree with you that it'll be a blending of the worlds. I just, you know, I just think generally what's been said by Washington, Blau's background, even him saying something that like, hey, this offense is going to revolve around getting the ball to Terry McLaurin, you know, 10 times a game. Coaches always say that Terry McLaurin's not going to get 170 targets, you know, 10 per game. That'd be awesome. That'd be great. That would be amazing. But I just think it means like we're going to try to maximize our playmakers and put them in different spots. And we know that Cliff Kingsbury was one of the most static offensive coordinators in the NFL. So,
right. Correct.
Especially from a deployment standpoint. So I think we'll see a blending of two worlds. And that, by the way, will be really interesting. But just the idea that like, oh, Washington is going to be first in no huddle rate and first in shotgun rate and everything like that. That's where I think we'll see some change.
Terry McLaurin, Antonio Williams. I think they pair very well together. McLaurin obviously working on the outside, Antonio Williams primarily working on the inside. But I will say this, regardless of whether we're talking about Cliff Kingsbury or Ben Johnson, I think no matter what, just given his play history, given his history with Daryl, by the way, when he was with Detroit originally, it was Daryl Bevel, I believe, was his offensive coordinator. They're going to get vertical. I just think with the quarterback they've got there, with Jaden Daniels, with the players that they have, I think that they are going to find ways to get vertical. And whether that's under center play action, that's probably that's been proven to be the most efficient way in the NFL to get downfield. But Antonio Williams fits into that scheme pretty well too, because like I said, even though he was mostly a slot player there for Clemson, man, I just really liked him. When Dabo got him downfield and asked him to go make plays, I thought Antonio Williams did a pretty good job in that regard as well.
Yeah. I like that call, by the way. Just one last note on that. I agree with you that Antonio Williams is more of a vertical slot than he is kind of the pop gun slot where, you know, because I didn't think he tested really well from an athletic measurable standpoint. You know, I mean, 80th percentile on the 40-yard dash, 88th percentile on the vertical jump. I didn't necessarily see like the explosion with the ball in his hands. He went down on first contact a good amount of in my charting, but where he really did pop, and you can see this on his route chart on the website, is like corner routes, post routes, dig routes, some of those more true vertical slot routes, both against man and zone coverage. And I really liked his hands in contested situations. Only 11.8% of his sampled targets were a contested target, but he caught almost, I believe, 80% of those plays. So I really liked the ball tracking. I thought his hands improved from previous seasons when he had more of a higher drop rate. And yeah, I kind of think maybe he could be, I feel like someone compares someone to Christian Kirk in every draft class. But maybe he could be like more of a Christian Kirk type of vertical slot option, as opposed to like, yeah, that spit the ball out and he does things after the catch. So yeah, if we see more of, looking at the Commander's tight end room, I mean, you know, they spent money on Chigakonkwo, who obviously is more of a move tight end. And then they have kind of a blocker in John Bates. I think they'll be in 12 and decent. And we'll see what we get from Ben Sinnott, if anything. We haven't gotten a lot from him so far, but I think they probably will be in 11 personnel, especially if Ayuk's on the roster more than we think. And that can allow Antonio Williams to be more of that vertical slot receiver. Yeah, so he's somebody like post-draft. I mean, I was high on him pre-draft. He was my wide receiver 8 in the class. So top 10 receiver for me, a guy I would have taken early in the second round. But like from a dynasty standpoint, you know, obviously Ayuk is a wild card. But even like year one production, I'm higher on Williams maybe more than most. I think he's going to have an instant impact on this team.
Well, he's going to have the opportunity. I think that's for sure. But we'll stay in the NFC East here. We go from Washington. We go to the New York Giants at 3.10, 10th pick in the third round. They take a big boy in Malachi Fields out of Notre Dame, 6'4", 218 pounds. He had a 38-inch vertical, which is really, really good for his size. He had a 10'4 broad as well. The one major concern, obviously, was the 4.61 40 that he ran. That is tight end speed. That's not good. That being said, Matt, Lance Zierlein did comp him to a Michael Pittman type of wide receiver. I don't quite necessarily see that. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. What do you see here with Malachi Fields joining Malik Nabers, Darnell Mooney, who they picked up in the offseason? And of course, hey, listen, of course, we got to talk about Darius Slayton as well. This is the Darius Slayton podcast, but Malachi Fields joining Nabers, Mooney, and Darius Slayton in New York.
Maybe they finally found a guy who might displace Darius Slayton as that boundary receiver.
Never.
I mean, it never happens, but they also have Calvin Austin on this roster. They signed in free agency as well. So with that in mind, it's why I kind of like the Malachi Fields pick here by the New York Giants. By the way, they traded up to get him. They traded multiple picks, including a 2027 fourth round pick. And teams were, I'm sure you noticed this during the draft, teams were hoarding those 27 picks because everybody believes that's going to be a big time class. Yeah. I've heard big receiver, big time receiver class too. I mean, every year is a good receiver class, but like this is like a big time guys at the top. So good for us, buddy. Good for us. Good. It's going to be good for us. But anyways, teams were hoarding those 27th picks, but the Giants did part for one to get Malachi Fields here. And I do like the move to get Fields because I was pretty. There were a wide range of opinions on Malachi Fields. You know, at times early in the process before the 4.640, he was kind of getting first round buzz, and I wasn't quite there with that. But you know, there are like some production based analysts that just hate Malachi Fields because he never had a big like kind of college breakout season. He's a little bit of an older prospect. I think I've seen his age kind of all over the place, but I believe he's like an older prospect too. So I'm not 100% sure about that, but I'm pretty sure about that. Anyways, like I like Fields though for what he showed. And I think one thing that's lost in kind of the production based stuff for him, and I do think this shows up on tape.
Yeah.
This is a former quarterback. Like he played quarterback in high school, actually in Charlottesville, Virginia, not far from, where I live. Yeah. He was at UVA. Funny story, actually. I was staying at a hotel in Charlottesville. And it was at the spa. It's getting a little treatment done.
Okay.
And one of the therapists there was like, oh, I'm talking about what I do, like play, you know, cover the NFL.
Yeah.
She mentions, oh, you got to keep an eye out on one of the kids I know, Malachi Fields. And I was like, okay, lady. And then he said, he got drafted.
All right, crazy lady. She's like, don't be talking to me about
she's
ball.
She's like,
what do you know about ball?
I was like, what is I didn't okay. I don't assume just because she's, you know, taking care of skin care. She's doing the facials at the I mean, come on. She knows ball. I'm not assuming just because of that. But she apparently did because Malachi Fields is a freaking top 100 draft pick. So that very amazing. Interesting story there. She knew her son knew him in high school. So anyways, Malachi Fields gets drafted by the Giants. So shout out to Susan.
There you go.
90% sure that was her name.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled BABBEL.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Okay. Anyways, whatever. Nobody cares about that. What we do care about, though, is Malachi Fields. He's a former quarterback, and I think that is like new important to remember that he's still relatively new to the wide receiver position.
Okay,
went to UVA again in Charlottesville. Went to UVA, so stayed around before transferring to Notre Dame, and then he became a collegiate wide receiver. Essentially, was kind of recruited as a wide receiver, but yeah, played football as a quarterback in high school. And I think you kind of got to remember that he's still relatively new to receiver, but he does, I think, show some quarterback traits. I always thought that Cooper Kupp, you know, as a collegiate receiver who had a quarterback background, came from like a quarterback family. he really always stood out to me as a guy that, you know, diagnosed and read zone coverage well. And I think that Fields, when you look at his reception perception data, there's no question that he struggles to separate on vertical routes against press man coverage. You know, his nine route success rate post routes is all pretty low. And obviously he's below the 35th percentile in success rate versus man press, but 63rd percentile success rate against zone coverage, 81.6% success rate. And I think you see that in ways where, especially he's working back to the football or running his routes against zone over the middle of the field, he settles in the right areas, works back to the football well, diagnoses and attacks leverage. So I think you kind of see some of that quarterbackness in his game, which is why, James, you know, I wrote this article for the site. I did a video breakdown on YouTube about like the outcomes for poor separators in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these guys end up becoming big slot receivers, these guys who don't separate in college, but they become high volume, big time players in the NFL. Almost all of them, they're either volatile deep threats, you know, kind of the Christian Watsons early in his career, you know, Kayshon Booty this past year, he was one of these guys, like a volatile deep threat type, or they become power slots. And I kind of think Fields could blur the line between both. You know, like I think that Fields, obviously, from a contested catch standpoint, a ball winning standpoint.
Yeah.
Like I do want that guy, you know, big ass 6'4", 210 plus frame on ball running vertical routes. And like, hey, by the way, Jackson Dart loves to throw it up into tight coverage. Yeah, we want that guy playing on the boundary a little bit. But in that Michael Pittman frame, not a big slot necessarily, but like let's get him 30% snaps in the slot, like Pittman has pushed it sometimes towards 30%, and at least get him off the line of scrimmage to run some of those like in-breaking routes against zone coverage. I just think there's a fascinating player here, and like there's something with Malachi Fields that I like.
I hate to burst your bubble.
Oh, go ahead.
First of all, I obviously agree with all of your assessments of Malachi Fields. I will say he was when I watched him play, I watched a lot of Notre Dame football. I cover the Big Ten for my local NBC affiliate here. But I watched a lot of Malachi Fields. He's just, to me, he's just slow off the line. You know, I think he kind of sort of, he just takes his time. And that doesn't serve him well when he's trying to get open quickly, but it serves him well, I think, in, you know, zone progression. Like you talked about, I thought he was really good at diagnosing zone plays and saying, all right, I'm going to take my time getting into these spots. I thought he was really patient in that regard. Okay, now that being said, this is not the right coaching staff for that, man. We got John Harbaugh and freaking Matt Nagy.
I know.
They're going to try to figure out a way to use Malachi Fields. I promise you, old school John Harbaugh. We got Matt Nagy, who has not been a good talent evaluator. They're going to see this 6'4", 220-pound frame and say, yeah, you're an X receiver. What are you talking about? This is what you played in college. You're a ball winner downfield. You're going to play X for us. That's going to be your role. What it's going to allow us to do is get Darius Slayton off the ball like he normally does. He's going to be our flanker. Then we've got, you know, we've got Malik Nabers running around all over the football field. I just think that that coaching staff is going to look at this body of Malachi Fields and look at his collegiate role and look at his ball winning downfield and say, yep, you're an outside X. You're a boundary outside X. If he gets, you know, maybe he plays some flanker stuff to allow Malik Nabers to go play X, you know, but I agree with you that obviously a player like this should see at least 30% of his snaps in the slot. I just think with this coaching staff, I just doubt that we would ever see that.
Yeah, I just don't think Slayton is going to have a big – maybe I'm wrong. I don't think he's going to have a big role on this team. Like, they just traded up for Fields. They brought in Calvin Austin. They brought in Darnell Mooney, who does have history way back in the day with Matt Nagy in Chicago. And obviously they have Neighbors.
God, that's right. Like, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. They have – and I actually like the way he was used in Atlanta more than he was used in Chicago. And that's a fair point. And it's a lot of what I said about the other New York team when we were talking about Omar Cooper and Kenyon Sadiq, that like almost any other coaching staff, I'd trust that they could figure this out. And like the next Jets offensive coaching staff will probably do fine with those guys. But like, it's just the Frank Reichness that was tough for me to get past. And I think that's also true, obviously, of Matt Nagy, my hangups there. Couple just things that I think are worth noting. One, Neighbors is obviously like a guy that you would love to, you're going to get him snaps at X receiver, which is why I think you take a player like Malachi Fields, because you want to get Neighbors some snaps as the outside X, but you also want to be able to move him around. So I think you want to take somebody who can credibly play both on and off the ball, which is what Malachi Fields will allow you to do. The other thing that's worth noting about this too, that even last year, Kansas City, talk about them as like a static spread offense. They were only 21st in the NFL in plays with 3+ receivers on the field. Like, they did get into some more heavier personnel packages. And obviously this team has Theo Johnson still on the roster. Max Toscano was talking about Theo Johnson when I had him on the show as like an underrated player. I don't think that, he obviously has had issues catching the football, but otherwise I think it's still a good player who's developing. They spent money on Isaiah Likely to bring him over, and he's not an inline, like Johnson I think is an inline tight end. Likely is more of the big slot player slash move tight end type. Like, when I just look at Fields again, a reason to kind of maybe bet on him is just like he's going to be on the field a lot, because I think he's gonna play X in two receiver sets. Malik Neighbors is your Z. And then I do think they can kind of kick him around a little bit, because Neighbors can actually play on ball X receiver. Of course, Neighbors is probably not going to be healthy to start the season. If he's active, he won't be 100%. So that might be just like something to remember too. But yeah, I think that when I look at all of these other body types, I do agree with you that other than Slayton, who can be a sacrificial X receiver at times, yeah, Mooney's a Z. Neighbors is a guy you want to move all over the place. Obviously, Calvin Austin's not playing X receiver for you at like a sub 180 pounds or whatever. Yeah. So I do think Fields will be a primary X, but I don't think he will be exclusive X receiver. But I like his ability, obviously, in contested catch situations. He has some of the best catches you're going to see in tight coverage. So you don't want to take him away from X, but I do think, obviously, like, he's not someone whereas like Elijah Surratt, I'm pretty well convinced like he should be a power slot. Yeah. I at least think that Fields, you want him to play at X receiver a little bit, but you also want to move him around too. And I think that, there's a chance we could see that with this Matt Nagy coaching staff, but I agree with you. They will probably be very old school.
One skill set that I have been obsessed with is in contested catch in college. Where are they winning those contested catch attempts? Is it up top, going over the top, or is it on these back shoulders? And it is interesting because Malachi Fields, all of his contested catches look exactly the same. Like, he is climbing that ladder and going upstairs to go win that football. I don't think that pairs well with every quarterback. Josh Allen doesn't. He did that early in his career. I think as of late, he absolutely does not do that. He's going to throw you that back shoulder if it's going to be contested, but it's going to be low. And you've got to be able to catch that ball low if you're going to catch it in a contested situation. Luckily for Malachi Fields, Jackson Dart is that guy.
Yes.
That will throw it up and go ask his receivers to go climb that ladder. So I do think that is a good pairing there for Jackson Fields and Malachi Fields. Jackson Dart, rather, and Malachi Fields too.
I love that point. And just building off that point as well, yes, he's going to throw him contested go routes. The other route that Jackson Dart loves to throw is like a deeper stop route, like a 10-yard stop route. And if you look at Malachi Fields' route charts on reception perception, his two most commonly run routes, obviously 9 route, just under 26%. Just under 27%, though, was the curl route, and an 81% success rate on those. I thought
it's
that was
his best route.
It's his best route, dropping his weight both against man and zone coverage. Like, his best separation moments against man coverage probably come on those curl routes and stop routes. And that's a route that Jackson Dart really likes to throw on the boundary as well. So I think this was a good what is our quarterback? Let's scout a receiver for our quarterback. And again, specifically targeted Fields, as we saw with the trade up to get him.
Caleb Douglas. Well, Miami tried to revamp their wide receiver room here in the third round by taking Caleb Douglas out of Texas Tech and Chris Bell out of Louisville at the 311 and 330. This is an interesting combination here by Miami, and I like it. Like, Caleb Douglas, 6'3", 205 pounds. He ran a 4.39 40. So this guy can move. And meanwhile, Chris Bell fell in the draft because he tore his ACL late in 2025. A lot of folks had Chris Bell at 6'2", 222 pounds, going much higher in the draft. He was getting some first round buzz. I don't know if he would have got there, but certainly if we're talking end of the third round, Miami is taking a swing on a player that has upside for a lot more. But they've revamped their wide receiver room just in the third round alone.
Oh, yeah, no question. And they came back around later and got Kevin Coleman Jr. on day three, who I think will compete with Malik Washington to be the slot receiver. I still like Malik Washington, too, by the way. So I definitely think this was what I feel like we talked about this on the show when we talked about the Dolphins wide receiver room, that this is kind of what I expected them to do. I didn't think they would use a first round pick on a wide receiver. I thought they would hammer it on day two and day three. And that's exactly what they did. They took multiple third round picks. They take a pick in the third day as well. This is very Packers-ish of them. And obviously John Eric Sullivan comes from the Packers front office. So this is to be expected. Now, what I wasn't expecting was Caleb Douglas in the third round, based on the consensus board. And obviously he was a guy that he was like one of the last guys I left off of the rookie roundup. And I went back and charted him and Xavien Thomas because there were another two guys that I didn't expect to go on day two. So yeah. I went back on Saturday morning and added both Caleb Douglas and Xavien Thomas, the Bears explosive third round pick, to the rookie roundup. So I was like, listen, you go on day two, you're getting put on the site. It's got to be done. Go. So got Caleb Douglas in on Saturday morning. And he was a guy that I had charted his teammate Reggie Virgil just because he was ranked a little bit higher on the consensus board. So Reggie Virgil didn't go to the fifth round. So Caleb Douglas definitely an aggressive pick in the third round. There's no question about that. And Chris Bell, though, on the other standpoint, like I do think even though Chris Bell's the second receiver drafted, he does have the higher ceiling than Caleb Douglas does for this team. I want to talk about Douglas and talk about his potential usage for the team and actually how that might marry with Chris Bell. But just on Chris Bell in particular, he was going into day two, my highest ranked wide receiver. Oh, after Denzel Boston, who was just strange to fall to the second round for Denzel Boston. But then the next tier of guys, Chris Bell was my top rank. But I also said this plenty of times with him, 21 years old, coming off the torn ACL. Even without the torn ACL in the mix, he was still pretty boom or bust as a prospect. Okay. I remember you asked me, is he AJ Brown or is he, Xavier Legette, Jonathan Mingo, Treylon Burks? I was like, can I say somewhere in the middle of that cavernous range of outcomes? And I do think that Chris Bell, from a rankings perspective for me, is kind of, I ranked him sort of in that middle ground there. I would have, even without the torn ACL, I would have still said he's like an early second round pick, more of a second round pick, but he goes in the third round because of the injury. And that might obviously hinder him to start his career. I always hate when rookies miss time in the offseason.
Right.
But once he's ramped up to go, I think he is an awesome fit with Malik Willis in what I'm imagining to be like a very run heavy offense with play action and like in breaking routes. His stuff over like the deep and intermediate middle needs work. But like short crossers and slants, Chris Bell turned out really well in reception perception. Out routes and nine routes really well there. So he can definitely play in the X receiver role because I thought he had some promising work against press man coverage. Still needs to develop for sure, but he's very explosive. Big sail routes, breaking towards the outside, off play action, which Malik Willis showed well on, go routes as well. When his brief moments with the Packers, like I think Chris Bell lines up pretty well with what I'm imagining this offense is going to ask of one of its boundary receivers. So, yeah, there's variance with him, no question. But I think it's just a great bet for Miami in the third round because their receiver room is so lacking for top options.
Can we go back and talk about Caleb Douglas here very quickly? Again, 6'3", 205 pounds, so he's got a little bit of size to him. He ran that 4.39. I really liked him after the catch. He's a twitchy athlete, man. He's got good ball tracking downfield. I love that he shows late hands. He really waits to get those hands up there, which I really liked. He had some bad drops, man. But overall, I thought his playmaking ability was pretty good. It's really interesting. I think when you look at him play on the field, you're like, man, this guy is skinny, but he's not small, right? Like he's 6'3", 205 pounds. So he's not that he's small. It's just that he's really elongated.
Yeah.
So he's got an interesting body build.
No, it's a, that's such a good point. Yeah, he is a long player. 6'3", 206 at the NFL Scouting Combine. He runs a 4.39. So I know, James, you like to see that.
Oh, yeah.
But 68th percentile arm length, 91st percentile hand size. And he just, yeah, like, but, pathetic vertical jump. I mean,
yeah, I don't get that. 31 and a half inch vertical. How? How are you running a 4.39? And by the way, his broad jump is fine.
Like, I know.
10.6 broad is fine. How do you have a 31 and a half inch vertical? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. 85th percentile 40 yard dash, 78th percentile broad jump, 9th percentile vertical jump. Crazy. Crazy.
Doesn't make any sense.
So he's just, he has a little, like if you go to mock draftable, like he has a, just a bizarre looking, kind of, almost looks like Pac-Man because everything is. Everything is like out here from a spider there, yeah. standpoint, and then it just comes right inside on the vertical jump there. So yeah, he looks like freaking Pac-Man. But anyways, Caleb Douglas, though, yeah, like, you know who he reminds me of from a movement standpoint? Like, I thought this was almost eerie watching him run routes, just like the way he runs routes, mm-hmm. the way he moves after the catch. Not as much like he's not as good as this player with the ball in his hands, but just some of the way he truly runs with the ball in his hands. And even the way that this guy like ducks his head when he runs routes, he looks so much like Quentin Johnston. Like it's, you could almost tell me that Caleb Douglas is That's doing funny. A Quentin Johnston like cosplay. Yeah, he's doing a damn impersonation of him out there. Like he's doing an impression of Quentin Johnston. It's bizarre. That being said, like I said, he's not the same tackle breaker, much less of a tackle breaker than Quentin Johnston was in college or the NFL, but he is a better contested catch player. Mention the hand size. I mean, he's a better ball tracker down the field. Same. But much like Quentin is very raw as a route runner, not as explosive, I think, as a mover of Quentin Johnston. He also is a skewed alignment player, of course, at playing at Texas Tech. Douglas took 85% sample snaps as the right outside receiver, 79% on the line of scrimmage. I do think he, if he works in the NFL, he probably will be an X, maybe a little bit sacrificial. I thought his vertical route running was not ideal in terms of getting separation, but you know, in a small sample in the rookie roundup, 64% success rate versus man, 67% against press. Like it wasn't horrendous in terms of his ability to separate and run routes. But definitely like his two most commonly run routes were the nine route and the dig route. And those were two of his worst success rates, but he flashed like an ability to win on quicker routes. So, and obviously he wins contested down the field too. So I think there's, like I said, I think there's a little something here. I didn't go back and like, oh my God, what a dumb. I mean, it was definitely an aggressive pick by Miami, but I wasn't like, this guy's freaking hopeless or anything. I think he just strikes me a little bit developmental, which in the third round was aggressive to take a developmental player, but I'm not going to kill him for that if they really like him as that X receiver role and they just see something there. And like I said, then them coming back and getting Chris Bell, especially if Bell doesn't have to be like an exclusive X and you can get him on the move and get him free releases and crossers and stuff like that, he's going to cook. And if he's healthy, he's going to cook.
Yeah.
I thought it was a bit of a reach. I didn't hate it though. I thought Caleb Douglas was like a classic fourth round draft pick, you know? I thought he showed a lot of things on tape that were at least interesting. Certainly the 40 time is really interesting, but I like his twitch after the catch too. There's some stuff there, man. Like I'm a higher on Caleb Douglas than I think most people are. I think he's got a chance. But
I had him ranked around like Jacoby Lane. You know, and Lane went more aggressive, but I thought Lane was a fourth rounder. And I think, yeah, Caleb Douglas, like fourth, fifth rounder. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Okay, skewed alignment for Caleb Douglas, skewed alignment for Chris Bell as well. So Miami double dipping to the skewed alignment guys here. It's the third round, so I get it. But again, Chris Bell, nearly 70% success rate versus man, 68% success rate versus press, pretty good. 77% success rate versus zone, again, pretty good. A little bit lower than the 70-80 threshold we'd like to see against man and zone, but he's right there. He's knocking on that door. Yeah. I will say this too. Again, 222 pounds, Matt, but it's strange. Like he didn't use size to win versus tight coverage. He is so dang good on that back shoulder catch and throw. I mean, golly, go turn on his game against UVA. He probably caught 10 back shoulders, you know? Ultimately, he caught 12 catches for 170 yards and two touchdowns in that game. But golly, it felt like every dang catch was a back shoulder throw, man. He's got huge hands as well. And I just thought that Chris Bell does a really, really good job kind of getting open on that back shoulder.
Yeah, I think that's a really good call. Chris Bell, like, he is someone that I think he's like credible at everything, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Like, he's a credible contested catch receiver. He's a credible after catch receiver. He goes down on first contact a lot. Like, I didn't think he was like a true tackle breaker, which is why the AJ Brown comparison does. I mean, no, but you just shouldn't compare any receiver to AJ Brown. Like, history is littered with bad AJ Brown comparisons. But anyways, like, he's more of a, he could, if he gets a lane, he gets a crease, he's going to explode through it. Obviously Miami, he did that against schools all the way from JMU to Miami, you know, in terms of the level of competition. Like, and I thought that, you know, Chris Bell would definitely have some volatile moments, but his high moments were really, really high. I also think too, you know, 6'1 7/8", so just under 6'2", 222 pounds, 51st percentile wingspan. You mentioned the 10 inch hands, 87th percentile. And this is going to sound mean, but I actually think he doesn't look that big. Like, he doesn't look when I look at him, he doesn't look like rocked up, like 222 pounds. Mm-hmm. But I think with that frame, he could probably get bigger and stronger. And like, if he gets bigger and stronger with his athleticism and what I would say is promising work against press man coverage, he definitely does, like I said, needs to develop on the in-breaking routes. But dude, if like he gets better as a route runner and also gets physically stronger, like I said, there's a lot of upside for a player like this. So I certainly liked him better than the Leggetts and the Mingos of the world. You know, like, he was a better prospect than that. But he's volatile. And what I would just worry about is I actually think in a way him landing with Miami, maybe this eases my worry with him, because I just also worry sometimes with these receivers that, you know, you're going to get kind of lost in the sauce if you don't get early playing time. And while I think that Chris Bell has the press man chops to play early, you just always wonder with the torn ACL, he's going to miss offseason time. You know, he's going to be a little behind the eight ball. But like, Miami's done that. Yeah. What are they going to do? Play Jalen Tolbert all year? Like, they're going to play. They're going to play Chris Bell at some point. They're going to play Tutu Atwell all year. Like, so I think at some point Chris Bell will get a chance. Yeah. And I'm just telling you right now, like, if Malik Willis is credible, you know, he's a credible starting quarterback, and like, they're running. Okay. Have you seen their offensive line? Their offensive line is, their average weight, I think I saw somebody say this today, is 325 pounds, and they have a 296 pound center. That's how big their offensive line is. Like, Patrick Paul, left tackle, massive. They're going to play Caden Proctor, their big ass tackle that they just drafted. They're going to play him at left guard. You know, you've got Jonas Abanaya, who they drafted last year, another big dude. Like, they have a ton of size on this offensive line. So, like, if they can and look, they're going to be behind in a lot of games, so this will be easier said than done. But, like, if they can pull off having a really good run game with Devon Achane back there and Malik Willis back there, and they're running play action, and we're running sail routes, and we're running quick crossers, Chris Bell, by November, December, if he can get up to speed and he's not, you know, he's locked in and everything like that, he's going to have, like, 1 to 2 sick catches a game. So that going into 27, he's going to be – you know, like, pretty locked into the program here. So I think in a way this was a good landing spot for him to grab here. I like it. And again, I also liked him coming back on the third day and drafting Kevin Coleman Jr. Kevin Coleman Jr. is a pretty, he went in the right range, like day 3 pick to me, but he's another guy that was really impressive on outcuts against man coverage. Just 66% success rate versus man, so nothing special, but like, his best routes were quick flat routes from the slot, out routes from the slot. And he's another guy that can make plays with the ball in his hands. He solid hands overall, 1-7 of his 10 contested targets, but his best stuff, he was in space on 69% of his sampled catches, went down on first contact just 47% of the time, broke multiple tackles 18% of the time. So a very slippery guy in the open field. So they have like three completely different wide receivers that they took from this year's class, Miami. They have like kind of, I think, a sacrificial X in Caleb Douglas. Big boy and Chris Bell, that I think has the highest upside, who can play outside but can move around the field. And then they got like a traditional slot archetype again, I think, in Kevin Coleman to compete with Malik Washington.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're watching the game at a buddy's house when you get a call that someone tried to break into yours. In a second, everything can change. That's why there's ADT. No one wants to feel unsafe in their own home. ADT security systems help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. The ADT Plus app keeps you in control the whole time. ADT's network is built for those game time moments. They have the most company operated monitoring centers in the industry. Don't leave your home wide open during an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
Even though Bell and Douglas aren't like tremendous after the catch guys, I think they both have after the catch ability. And then when you talk about Kevin Coleman in that way too, I think they really thought, okay, if we're going to try to go make some noise out here, we're going to try to go get some guys who can catch the football and then get some additional yards. You know, like this is, I think, the offensive philosophy that they're going to have there in South Beach, man. So I think that's what they're trying to kind of sort of look for. And oh, by the way, I bring up the back shoulder stuff with Chris Bell, because I think that's where Malik Willis, I think he developed that a little bit in Green Bay, throwing that back shoulder. So I wonder if that skill set is an interesting pairing there as well. So I'm curious. This is this is not a good wide receiver room. Okay. I mean, we're hyping it up and stuff, you know, but like it's not good. It's not good at all.
No, it's not good, but it's if these guys hit, like, it's a remade wide receiver room.
Yeah, like that's interesting.
But this is exactly what you should do. Just throw darts at it.
I agree. Good job, Miami. All right. We go to Carolina, where Chris Brazel out of Tennessee was taken in the middle of the third round here, 19th in the third round. I'm just curious, man, like, how does he get on the football field? You know, you got Teterowa McMillan, you've got Jalen Coker, you've got Xavier Leggett, a former first round pick. How does this 6'4", 200 pound speedster, Chris Brazel, get on the football field with Carolina, Matt?
Well, I mean, is it over for Xavier Leggett?
Is it?
I mean, it might be over for Xavier Leggett. I want to talk a little bit about like maybe how everybody can work together and some theories that I have on that. But Chris Brazel, like, you know, this was the right range to take him, you know, in the third round. I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, Carolina, another one, if you just look at their wide, like, they have the smallest quarterback in the league, but they have the biggest wide receiver room in the NFL. Is that, I don't know. I don't know that that means anything or if that's like intentional team building, but it is kind of, even just if you look at like their first round pick, Monroe Freeling, left tackle, which I, by the way, a great pick I thought by them. He's massive. They have Robert Hunt, who's like one of the biggest guards in the league at 6'5 and over 300 pounds. Like their center last year, Cade Mays, was a massive dude. They took another center this year. Like there's this big, big football team. And then they have Bryce Young. But then these are some of the Panthers receivers. Chris Brazel, who we just said is like kind of lanky. So 6'3" and over just around 200 pounds, 6'4" over just around 200 pounds. Xavier Legette, the aforementioned, 6'3", 227. Tedaro McMillan, 6'5", 212. Jalen Coker, 6'3", 213. I think he's actually more like, I think he's more like 6'1", 208 is what I've heard. But still, regardless, big wide receiver. Even Bryson Tremaine, kind of a blocking guy that they used last year, 6'4", 212. And then there, and then there's Jimmy Horn at 5'8", 174 pounds. There he is. But again, this big ass wide receiver room does Carolina have? So they add Chris Brazel to that, who 6'4", just under 200 and something pounds. So he is definitely kind of lanky, but also a big wideout himself. So it's, I don't know, James, if that means anything. But yeah, they're surrounding Bryce Young with all these big, big wide receivers.
I'll tell you what it means. Bryce Young can barely see over his offensive line. So you got to get tall receivers out there. So you see the top of their helmets and you can throw the helmets, dude. You know?
Oh my God. You know, that's so funny because back in the day, Dave Gettleman, and I hated this idea by Gettleman at the time. This is even like right on the beginning of when I started kind of charting wide receivers. Yeah. He was obsessed with getting Cam Newton, big guys him. Like Kelvin Benjamin and Devin Funchess, because he's like, well, Cam Newton misses high. So if he misses high, let's just get him these big targets. God. And like, that was just so, how about get him somebody who can get open? Cam Newton won't be missing these guys high if there's actually an open window for him to throw into. And so I don't know. Yeah, maybe Bryce Young. It's like, well, you can see those guys down there. You get hard to miss Tedaro McMillan and Chris Brazel screaming on the outside and Jalen Coker ripping it on in the slot.
I'm telling you, that does, it's got to mean something, man. Like, I'm positive that Bryce Young, and again, I'm not sure, but I'm very confident that Bryce Young does have problems looking over his offensive line.
You might be right, honestly. You might be right, but you're going to, when you're 5'10", allegedly, you're going to have some tough time seeing. But regardless, okay, kind of back to the point here.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting, obviously, about Chris Brazel, again, I think I said this about him during the process, that he is just a very obvious blend of red flags and appealing marks. And that's just talking about him on the field. Like, there were off-field concerns with Chris Brazel. And we'll leave it at that. Off-field concerns with Chris Brazel, but on the field, even there's obviously just some red flags. When you look at him, he comes from obviously the Looney Tunes offense at Tennessee, where he was a skewed alignment receiver. He took 95% of his sampled snaps on the right outside receiver position, one of the highest I've charted in the last few draft classes. Now, he obviously played at Tulane before that, so I do think that will be an interesting test case. Like, can Brazel break the trend of these skewed alignment prospects who come from these stripped down college offenses? Like, does his past from the Tulane perspective help him when he adjusts in the NFL? That will be like an interesting data point as we look at Chris Brazel. So I don't want to just completely hold that against him. And also, when you look at him versus some of the other Tennessee wide receivers in the past, Brazel is, while he definitely doesn't, he's not a nuanced route runner or like a fully developed separator just now, he's really good in the intermediate area. Dig route 81% success rate while running that at a pretty high volume. Out route success rate 80%. So those horizontal breaking routes in the deep and intermediate areas, he's just got like really loose fluid hips to snap open in that area. And Tedaroa is good on those routes as well. I talked to McMillan at the Super Bowl, and he said, my favorite route to run, I love running dig routes. It's his best route in reception perception. So shout out there. We have the video of that, I believe, on my YouTube channel on the shorts. Also, by the way, Jalen Coker is really good working that middle and on the outbreaking routes as well. And Bryce Young, those are some of his best routes to throw. Like, even though he's the smaller quarterback, he's actually one of the smaller quarterbacks that's, whether he can see it or not, he's good at working the middle of the field. He's been willing to throw the over the middle and to test those areas. So I think this fits with Bryce Young in that way. And even just like, if you think about this receiver room, it's quite literally like a basketball team in that they're all big guys, but also like they can all line up kind of everywhere. You know, McMillan was someone that, number one, he had some success when playing in the slot last year. He also expressed an interest to me in our conversation that he wanted to, you know, he's like, he said, like, look at the best receivers in the NFL. You got to line them up everywhere. You got to move them around, like, to maximize matchups and get your playmakers the ball. So getting someone like Brazel, like, Xavier Legette can't play X. He can't. He's not that prospect.
Yeah.
So you don't want to have him there. So, and Coker, obviously, I think is big. He can play X and he's a good enough route runner to do it. He's more technically precise than Legette, but you know, his best stuff is as a flanker slot. So if you're going to move McMillan around, get a guy like Chris Brazel who can come out there. And even if he's not going to get a lot of separation, he is good in tight coverage and he can be a credit because he's fast. He can stretch the defense out. So he's going to allow you to move McMillan around, allow you to move Coker around. I think that's good for Carolina to get somebody like that and keep throwing darts at a wide receiver room that kind of needed a little juice downfield. The other thing I think is interesting about this, James, if you go back and look at Bryce Young's, like where he does his best work,
okay,
it's actually out of empty. Like when you get nobody in the backfield, you spread the field out. In 2024, 11.2 yards per completion, 7.3 adjusted yards per attempt in empty. Last year, a little bit less from an adjusted yards per attempt perspective, but 9.3 yards per completion. They also didn't go to it as much last year. Like he had 96 attempts out of empty in 2024, and obviously he was benched that year. And last year was 88% or 88 attempts. And four touchdowns, one interception last year. In 2024, 96 passer rating out of empty, which is kind of like away from the trend of the league, right?
I was like, what?
It's all like, let's get big, let's get these tight ends on the field, yeah, condensed stuff. I have kind of wondered, like, is a team going to go away from that trend and like, yeah, let's actually spread it out and really attack the field. And if a team was going to do that, doesn't it kind of make sense for Carolina to do that? Because they,
yeah, like, it does.
Bryce is his best stuff in college was when he was a point, like kind of like a, would you say like a point guard type quarterback, yeah, like spread it out and attack with all these different guys. And when they've tried to do that previously, they just haven't had enough receiver bodies. So I actually think like, hey, you know what? You get Brazel and McMillan on the outside and Legette and Coker in the two slots. If we're in empty, we're truly five wide here. Like there's, or even, hey, like in a three by, we got three guys on one side of the field, like a 3x2 here, truly, like we're five wide at that point. Brazel, McMillan, Legette, and then Coker's the slot on the other side. Like, I think there's like, that could be pretty interesting if they're fully committed to spreading it out in that way. So, yeah, I want to do some more research on that about like what's Bryce Young's, you know, passer rating and EPA and stuff like that when there's multiple receivers on the field versus like two tight ends and stuff. But this pick made me think about that because they do theoretically, I don't think they'll totally just want to, you know, flush Legette, right? Like, I don't think they're at that point, but I think they obviously I think they've come to terms with who he is. Like, Coker's there too.
Yep.
But they might still want to obviously keep Legette in the fold. Horn again is a guy that flashed a little bit last year. So getting Brazel in here just gives him a totally another body type and maybe allows him to spread the field more. And again, like you're not like counting on him to be one of your top two receivers this year. You're like, let's develop this guy. And then maybe by year three, he's awesome. Cause these Tennessee prospects, obviously there's still some risk there.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, so when we come back, we will talk more about some of these these third round guys because there's just so many of them. Like I said, 9 picks in the third round went wide receiver here. But we have to step away. Go ahead, Matt.
Before we go, one quick website announcement.
Yeah.
Zach Miller and I, and when I say Zach Miller and I mean 95% Zach and 5% me, have been hard at work refreshing the dynasty rankings from a utility and format standpoint on the site. I think they should be ready to debut, if not tomorrow, so today when people are listening to this, definitely by the end of the week.
Okay,
I think you guys are really going to like it. So if you're a Prime or above subscriber to the site, you get access to my dynasty wide receiver rankings. I think you're going to really like the new look that we have. It's totally refreshed and I think people are going to dig it. So just want to promote that for people to check that out on the site. And if you're not subscribed, I think you'll find this to be worth it.
There you go. Receptionperception.com. com. And by the way, if you want RP Lite, sign up for the newsletter. Yeah. You're going to get some free content on the Reception Perception newsletter there as well. Before we go, got this interesting comment on Spotify from, I'm only reading this because the handle is so great. Squishy Gangsta on Spotify. Squishy Gangsta.
What a handle.
I love it. Quote. Oh, Matt, come on, bro. To Matt, not knowing Dude Perfect got me dead. I forgot when we were talking about Dude Perfect.
This was about Chase Roberts.
Oh, yeah, the prospect out of BYU. He looks like he should be a guy on Dude Perfect. That's right. Anyway, Squishy Gangsta. We appreciate you, brother.
I don't know. I still don't know who Dude Perfect is. So sorry, Squishy Gangsta. Other than, yeah, they were that, they did that thing with the NFL that one time. So yeah,
for that one time,
yeah. I don't know anything about that. Chase Roberts, though, as expected, went undrafted. No shock when you're a 4'6 receiver and, you know, you're a billion years old coming out of BYU, but did sign with the Raiders. So keep an
eye on that. Yeah. A BYU guy in Vegas. What could go wrong?
Yeah, no, him and Fernando will be leading Bible study together.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Maybe we could get a good Bible narrative going. I need Jack Besh. Let's get him in. We need to get him in the Bible study too. We need to get him
something.
Yeah, let's go.
You know, let's go. You know, maybe they could be like they could be LinkedIn buddies. You know, like does Jack Besh have a LinkedIn? Because if not, he needs to. He needs to get on LinkedIn. He needs to friend up. He needs to make a LinkedIn connection with Mendoza and let's get it going. You know,
talk about another thing I don't know anything about is LinkedIn. Jack Besh does have
LinkedIn,
LinkedIn, but it looks like he hasn't updated it since he was at LSU. So that's not good.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Mendoza's not going to enjoy that.
Student at Louisiana State University. I'm interested in mass communications as it relates to the sport industry.
Oh, okay.
Well, all right. So maybe you can still do the connection. Yeah, you're right. So you connect.
Yeah, you connect
on LinkedIn. Okay. Exactly. Well, he can connect with Fernando. But yeah, he has not updated it since 2021 when he's at LSU. So
that's what he needs to do. If he wants to get in Mendoza's good graces, you got to get his connection on LinkedIn first, because apparently that's the only thing the only quote unquote social media.
Did you hear his ringtone, by the way? Like, I think they played a video.
What's his ringtone?
Oh my God. You've got
Mendoza's ringtone.
I'll send it to you. People just go on social media and look up Fernando Mendoza ringtone. I'm not going to do the noise, cause it's just like, it's like the most goofy, like boomer ringtone you've ever heard it. You probably have the same ringtone, honestly.
How dare you? How dare you, sir?
I'll send you the link, but everybody else go check it out. If you haven't seen it, it was really, really funny.
I will have people know, to defend my honor, my ringtone is actually the Yoshi theme from Super Mario Brothers. That's actually my ringtone. So I don't know if that's actually more or less boomer, but it is what it is. I have it and I display it proudly. Okay. Anyways, I'm going to go look up Mendoza's ringtone now, because maybe he and I are buddies. I don't know. We'll find out. Maybe, you know what? Maybe I should try to add him on LinkedIn. That's, you know what? That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go find Mendoza on LinkedIn and try to add him. Two former Cal guys. Let's go.
Yeah. Two former Cal guys. So there you go. When I went to Sloan couple years ago, people like, can I add you on LinkedIn? I'm like, I mean, you can try. I'm talking about Jack Besh hasn't updated that thing since LSU. I'm pretty sure I'm incredible. Like just starting a job at NFL.com.
There it is. Nice. I haven't updated in
11 years ago.
Okay, good. Lovely. So, all right. Well, anyways, there we go. I don't know how we got down this rabbit hole, but it's all good. Squishy Gangster, we appreciate you on Spotify. We appreciate all the comments that we get on Spotify and on Apple. If you guys could leave us a 5-star review, that would be awesome. Would be very, very much appreciated. Anyways, we got to go. For Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We'll see you. But remember, it is never too late. It is never too late to chase your dreams. All right, peace.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh no. dance.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, mine starts here.